Okay, you guys, so April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And before I get into today's episode, which is actually a replay of one of the very first episodes that was released on this podcast called Stephanie's Story, I wanted to read some information from an article. And this article is from CNN, and it is from the end of 2022. And it's about sexual assault. And it states that reports of sexual assault in the U.S. military jumped 13% from the previous fiscal year. It talks about how the defense secretary is looking at combating sexual assault and how it's such a top priority in the military. But I want everyone to understand who's listening that what is reported is not even close to the sexual assaults that actually happen in the military. And so increasing awareness about these things that are happening, it is very, very important. Sexual assault directly impacts mental health in the military in so many ways. And a number of guests who have been on this podcast have been impacted by military sexual assault, sexual trauma, sexual harassment. And so if you haven't listened to this episode before, I hope that you take to heart what Stephanie is saying here. And please make sure that you are sharing these episodes with your network. Rate, review if you haven't already. And keep spreading the word, because the more we talk about mental health, the more we can make changes. So here's today's episode. I hope you guys enjoy. See you guys next week. Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations. All right. Thank you for joining us for this episode today. Today's guest's name is Stephanie. She is from South Jersey originally. She is a PR2 in the United States Navy. For those of you who don't know what a PR2 is, it is a petty officer second class. And she's been in the Navy for just over 4 years. Outside of the Navy, she works as a volunteer EMT and a medical caregiver for the Department of Social Services, specifically working with elderly with end-phase dementia, Alzheimer's, and end-of-life care for terminal illness. Overall, she describes her mental health experience in the Navy as an uphill battle, but she has been receiving wonderful resources necessary to better herself more recently, and describes everything as a journey of self-reflection and other factors such as professional intervention and medication. So thank you so much for joining me on the show today, Stephanie.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And so, Stephanie, what I'm going to have you do is just take it away, sharing your story with mental health in the Navy. And I'm not going to interject at all. I'm just going to let you share everything that you want to say. And then we look forward to hearing what you have to say. Thanks so much.
Thank you. I guess I'm going to start things off as what it was like during my more junior years and how things are currently. I haven't been in a super long time. I've been in just over 4 years. I know being in the Navy as a female, it can be very daunting and very scary coming in as a female in a very male-dominated field. When I first went to boot camp, I was actually engaged to someone that I had been seeing as a civilian. They actually left for the Marine Corps before I had joined the Navy. And so they had actually joined the service slightly before me. They were kind of in whatever the Marine version of A school is while I was in boot camp at the time. And once I got out of boot camp and I was in A school, I had found out that my fiance at the time had been cheating on me. And so, you know, I am in A school. It's like this big thing. Everyone's kind of in limbo of like, oh, I'm kind of in the Navy. I'm kind of still, you know, a student at the time. And so I was also going through this really big heartbreak. So I did kind of what everyone would do at that time. I was 19. I partied. I drank a lot. I did what you shouldn't do. I underage drank. And back then, hotel parties were the big thing. And I was with a group of older people who could purchase alcohol. And unfortunately, I encountered my first experience with sexual assault in the Navy. It was, I want to say, it was a couple months after I graduated boot camp. I was at a hotel party. I got blackout drunk because I was deep in my feelings from, you know, finding out that my fiance had cheated on me. You know, I was scared, you know, being released into the world after boot camp. And like, I got really drunk and I, you know, woke up the next morning. I was in the hotel room, you know, there was a pool there. So I was in my swimsuit and I lifted up the comforter and I noticed that my bikini bottoms weren't on my body. And I looked over and there was a guy sleeping next to me and he didn't have his swim trunks on. And, you know, I cannot begin to describe the amount of things that you think in that moment as a 19-year-old going through all this stuff and then, you know, waking up like, you know, with all that going on. And I called my friend at the time that her family was actually like local to the area that we were, you know, in A school at, and her family was law enforcement. And so they took me to the hospital. We did a, you know, like a full rape kit and everything. And we got in contact with like the sappers and everything. And at that time I was told that I had to do a restricted report because I had been drinking underage. And so if I wanted to pursue this person legally, I would get a dishonorable discharge from the military. And, you know, I didn't want to believe it at the time. I was like, that can't be true. Like this bad person did a very bad person thing to someone good who was in a bad place mentally, emotionally, physically. And so I went to a couple different like sapper VAs. I went to different like legal avenues and I was like, is this actually true? You know, I did my research and all these different resources were coming back to me with the same thing. They're like, yes, if you pursue this person legally, you're going to lose your career. And so like to this day, this is like not necessarily a secret, but this is a thing that I have to live with, knowing that this person is still in the Navy and I was never able to pursue them because it was either that or my job. And, you know, I was only 19 and, you know, that's a crazy thing. And, you know, now being a more senior person in the Navy, I'm unfortunately hearing more and more stories of, you know, senior people reflecting back in their junior years and even junior sailors, like recalling similar stories of being under the influence and not being able to report their assaulters because they were under the influence and either they're not believed because they were under the influence or, you know, they were underage. And so it's either their career or they get to go after that person. So that's definitely something that's stuck with me for a while. And I guess not necessarily another instance of sexual assault. Thankfully, I've personally never experienced another sexual assault in the military, but I have experienced sexual harassment. I was overseas back in 2018. You know, at the time I had a really good relationship with my immediate coworkers. It was quite a small command. So it was one of those things where no matter like what rank you were, whether you lived in the barracks out in town, kind of everyone knew everyone, even the officers knew everyone. But unfortunately, that meant like if someone talked about something, it got around to everyone within like a couple hours. And one week I came into work and there was a lot of buzz kind of going around, you know, when people are talking about something, but you don't quite know what they're talking about, but you know, something's kind of going on. So you want to kind of get in on the chatter. And so the work day is going on and you know, like there's talk going on about something. And eventually I caught wind of it. And there were a couple of male sailors that had gotten drunk that weekend, and they all went out in town and they got matching tattoos. And the tattoos were of Eskimos going fishing, and on the end of the fishing line was female genitalia. And I later actually physically saw like one of their tattoos, and trust me when I say it was like a toddler drew a vagina, like it, like a crudely drawn vagina on the end of a fishing line from an Eskimo. And for those of you that don't know the term Eskimo brothers, it's I still don't fully understand it. I guess it's when like a group of guys hook up with the same person. But I digress. These group of male sailors, they got drunk, they went out, they all got like the same exact tattoo of what I just described. And in addition to that, below this Eskimo tattoo, they had the names of certain females from my command actually tattooed under that, like actual names of people. And I come to find out my name was one of them. And I recognized the names of other people that were brought up, like the chatter, like other names that were being brought up. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm either friends with those people or I know those people. They're really good people. And, you know, at some point, like I was able to, you know, wrangle up one of the guys that had supposedly gotten the tattoo. And it was very real. It was very crude. And it was absolutely ridiculous. And me and some of the girls whose names were on it got together and found out none of us had been with any of these guys whatsoever. It was actually a pact that they had made. Me and these girls that were all tattooed under it, we were all about to PCS within a couple months of each other. And these guys had made a pact that they were going to sleep with us before we PCS'd. And we were horrified because we didn't know what that meant. We didn't know by what means they were going to accomplish that, because God forbid, you know, you get the name tattooed, how far are you going to go to accomplish that? But we all took this up all the way to the CMC, who happened to be a female CMC. And we also had the Simeo get involved. I believe he was either a first class or a chief. And so we had a female CMC, male Simeo, and we had written confessions from most of the male sailors that were involved, that like they fessed up, they actually did this, and they actually like fully admitted like that they knew like this group of girls were PCSing, and it was like a drunken pact that they made that they were going to sleep with like the list of girls that they got like tattooed on them. And essentially the female CMC said that unless they actually acted on it, that they couldn't do anything about it. And the Simeo agreed with the CMC on that. They said because these male sailors had not physically harmed us, physically attempted to rape us or sexually assault us, that nothing could be done about their actions. And I distinctly remember before I PCS'd from that duty section, I mean, not duty section, duty station, I had my neighbor from that building. They would, whenever they were home, they would walk me to and from my car whenever I was working, because I was petrified that one of these sailors was going to jump me and attempt to either physically assault me or rape me to go through with that tattoo packs that they had going on. And I haven't heard from any of the other girls since, but I can imagine they had a similar level of concern until they PCS'd as well. And I mean, those were the two major stories of my junior years that were pretty defining, because I remember when I first swore in when I was in the DEP program, I heard all these horror stories of how sailors got raped and sexually assaulted. And I genuinely thought that was just something that was told by men to keep women out of the military. I didn't actually think that was something that happened. I didn't think that was something that was real. And then, you know, I joined and everything that I thought was a scare tactic actually happened to me. Yeah. And it was just honestly like baffling looking back on it now, especially knowing what I know now, like knowing that I could have fought past the CMC and the Simeo. I could have taken it all the way up to the CO. Like a lot of junior sailors also don't know that they have the ability to do that, because we're taught in boot camp that even a first class is scary. So imagine, you know, how scary it is going before a CMC as an airman. You know, if they tell you no, like you're basically shitting yourself at the thought of going before the commanding officer. But, you know, knowing what I know now, I would have absolutely gone, like, respectfully, CMC, go fuck yourself. And I would have gone to the XO, the CO. I would have done that in that instance to protect myself and the other females involved in that specific case. But I guess fast forwarding to now on the somewhat senior end of things, as an E5 over 4, you know, we've surpassed that. That was a couple years ago. Not that it hurts any less, but you know, I've taken the steps necessary, like mentally, to move past that. I drew a blank. So a couple years ago, I'm not gonna deep dive into my medical history, because that's a whole can of worms. Back in 2019, I sustained a traumatic brain injury, and that left me with permanent nerve damage on my left side. It left me permanently deaf on my left side. It left me with PTSD, and it left me with severe chronic migraines, and then also just chronic pain throughout my body. Best I can describe it as, chronic pain differs from person to person. Just imagine just living your life and it feels like a lightning bolt going through your body. Absolutely debilitating. There's nothing you can do about it. It's residual nerve damage. It comes when it comes and it goes when it goes. And I laugh because that's the only reaction I have to it at this point. But for the longest time, I remember after my TBI, I was in the ICU for 2 weeks, and I was in intensive neuro rehab for almost 3 months, learning the basics, how to walk, how to write, how to shower, how to dress myself. And over those 3 months, I was also given therapy. And this was not done through the Navy. Once I left the ICU, this was in a civilian hospital. And it was absolutely fantastic. You know, I am currently performing my job as any other, you know, Navy sailor does right now. I am, you know, aside from having like some left-sided weakness and being deaf on my left side, you know, I'm almost exactly like my former self. But when I was discharged from neuro rehab, that also meant I was discharged from their therapy services. And where I'm currently stationed, there is a massive wait list for mental health services because we have a ton of ships that come and go from where I'm at. So depending on how many ships are here, depends on how much strain is on the mental health care providers here. So I went on a wait list after I got discharged, and this was back in 2019. Well, it was the end of 2019. So when I got discharged, it was the very beginning of 2020. And, I had pretty severe PTSD, and, I'm not going to get into, you know, like my triggers or anything, but it made some day-to-day tasks pretty debilitating, like, you know, certain errands, certain, I don't know, you would call it like daily tasks essential to, you know, like getting through living, and stuff like that. And so, things as, you know, important as hygiene just started, you know, really going downhill and stuff like that. And, you know, no matter how many resources I contacted, things were just getting really bad. And I know the Navy likes to preach about going to the chaplain, and I did use that resource. The chaplain is definitely a fantastic resource to use, but it's not a permanent resource. They're a great person to talk to when you need someone to listen to you. But they're not a healthcare professional. They're not someone that can, you know, give you tactics, you know, work through like anxiety attacks. They can't prescribe you medications. They also can't recognize when you're a danger to yourself, and they're not a mandated reporter. They actually can't report you when you're a danger to yourself because they are one of the few people that are sworn to absolute secrecy. Even if you say you're going to murder someone, absolute secrecy. And so, you know, I mean, that's a good thing, you know, like they can't tell anyone anything, but if you genuinely fear for your life because of your mental health, you know, sometimes you do need someone that's going to, you know, raise the red flag on your behalf, and the chaplain can't do that. But, you know, moving forward, finally back in June of 2021, well over a year later, a little bit over a year and a half later, I finally, you know, got off my spot in the wait list, and I finally was able to see a provider. And it was probably one of the biggest sighs of relief I've ever had in my entire life. It started off with, they do like a basic mental health assessment. So it's fairly long, at least from what I experienced. It was about a 2-ish hour session with, like a general, psychologist, and you kind of just give them like the Cliff's note version of what's going on with you. And they're not the person that you're going to be talking to regularly. They kind of just take in everything that you you tell them is going on with you, and they set you up with like a network of resources that they think best fit you based off of what you've kind of just dumped on them. And they ended up setting me up with a really, really wonderful psychologist and psychiatrist. And something that people also don't know is, on top of that, if you get put on mental health medication on top of having your psychiatrist, oftentimes behavioral health has a civilian nurse that does monthly checkups with you, and they're not a mental health professional in the sense where like they're not your therapist, but they're there to help monitor like mood changes and like symptom changes, and like they do like safety checks on you to like see if you're like a harm on yourself and stuff like that. And you know, it seems like a little bit tedious, but it's nice because when I first started on my mental health medication, some things got better and some things got worse, but as the person personally going through those changes, I didn't realize that some things were kind of going sideways. And when she was calling me to do those checks, she was able to alert my psychiatrist like, hey, we need to adjust this dosage because I'm noticing she's kind of getting a little funky. And that's a resource with the mental health that I didn't know was available to us. And I really appreciate now that I have that available to me. Yeah. And, you know, I know I've kind of just been rambling on, and I'm a bit of a fast talker. It's part of my TBI. I kind of ramble on and repeat things and kind of forget about what I've just spoken about, but I think I've just about covered everything.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story, Stephanie. I know I can relate so much to a lot of what you said, and I'm sure a lot of other people can relate to. I have just a couple other closing questions for you, if that's okay.
Yep.
All right. Awesome. So first off, overall, do you feel that your experience, just kind of big picture, mental health wise, do you feel that it was more positive or more negative?
I feel like towards the end, it was more positive, just because with rank, I gained knowledge. I definitely feel like we need to give out more resources to people straight when they come out of boot camp.
I 100% agree with you there. What would you have changed to make your experience better other than more resources? Is there anything specific that you think would have made things better for you, especially when you were more junior?
Being more aggressive, not like beating people up, but being more of an advocate for myself.
Okay. And for people that don't feel like they can advocate for themselves, do you think that there's anything that might be helpful for someone that maybe is a little more of an introvert or a little more timid, like any specific resources?
I'm at a loss for words. There are patient advocates and nurse advocates at the naval hospitals, and they can actually follow up with you, and like you can get one assigned to you, and basically you meet with them. You can also get like a case manager, and most of the time they're civilian. I actually have one because I have a traumatic brain injury, and it makes things very difficult to like remember sometimes, like all my appointments. So I have a nurse case manager who's a civilian, and Sometimes when I lose wording or I have a hard time getting my point across to a doctor, she'll call them on my behalf or she'll email them on my behalf and she'll get my point across for me. So you can actually contact your doctor or talk to your PCM about potentially getting like a nurse case manager or a civilian case manager, someone to help you manage your medical appointments and medical referrals.
Okay. And then last question for you. If you were in charge of the Navy, what would you do overall to help make mental health better for people that maybe are in vulnerable positions or experience even maybe something similar to what you went through?
That's a really great question. So I actually, it's a couple years old at this point, but I am a suicide counselor. It's similar to like a Sapper VA. It's not as well known. I haven't met many people that have it. I definitely think that we should have a lot more people with that qualification. As much as we stress Sapper VAs, we should have suicide VAs and like suicide counselors a lot more, like a lot more points of contact for things like that. Just like safe people to approach, because a lot of our leadership is very scary and, you know, like just having like a softer, more approachable point of contact, like our good old Sapper VA guys.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Stephanie, again, for sharing your story. Thank you for answering the questions and providing value to everyone listening today. And I hope that anyone listening was able to get some value, or maybe you related to Stephanie's story in some way, shape, or form. But I just wanted to give you my most sincere thank you and gratitude again for just taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you again for having me.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today, with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.